It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Kreshap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Trey Schaff.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am Trey Schaap. Have you ever wondered how the United States Golf Association selects the courses that will host its championships from year to year? It is an intriguing question when you think about it. From this past year at Pinehurst No. 2 to next year at Oakmont to the 2026 at Shinnecock to Pebble Beach in 2027, for the United States Open, the USGA has a rigorous selection process, and it is one that not only holds true for the flagship championship, the US Open, but for every championship they contest. In 2025, the United States Golf Association will conduct its championships in Oklahoma, New Jersey, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Colorado, California, Maryland, Georgia, Texas, Oregon, North Carolina, Arizona, and Virginia. It is interesting to learn about course selection and how the courses fit into the championship that it will host, from the U.S. Open to the U.S. Junior Girls to the U.S. Senior Open and every tournament in between. In this episode, you will learn more about course selection as I talk to Kevin Hammer, who is the Championship Committee Chair and a member of the USGA Executive Committee. At UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, they are dedicated to keeping you in the game, from sports injuries to joint replacement. They provide world-class care right here in Arkansas. Call 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels, on the web at bphotels.com.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine is taking golf to the next level. As the official orthopedics and sports medicine provider for Razorback Athletics, UAMS Health covers all 19 Razorback sports programs, including golf, and is the official medical partner of the Simmons Bank Championship presented by Stevens. They're also proud to sponsor professional golfers Ken Duke and Glenn Day. Have a golf injury? Call Ortho at 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today. That's 501-686-8674. Welcome back to From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Kevin Hammer is the Managing Director and Wealth Management Advisor of the Reuben Hammer Eaton and Conrad Group of Merrill Lynch in Delray Beach, Florida. He is also on the USGA Executive Committee, which is a volunteer position. He grew up around the game of golf and recently completed his second and final year as president of the Florida State Golf Association. He played collegiate golf at the University of Florida and joined me via Zoom recently for this interview. On the tee, Kevin Hammer.
Kevin, thanks for joining me on From the Shortgrass. Do you remember the first time you ever picked up a golf club and what that feeling was like?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I was too young to remember, and but I know it was at a very young age. Yeah.
Were you self-taught?
No, not at all. I mean, although you could argue a little bit of that. My father and mother were both in the golf business. My father grew up, playing a lot of golf himself, and went to the PGA Tour. Played for a few years on the PGA Tour. Then became a club professional for over 43 years. And I grew up at one of the clubs that he was involved in starting here in Southeast Florida. And so I was born and raised right there, and grew up about 150 yards from the clubhouse and the driving range, and was probably picking range balls off the range before I can remember as well.
Boy, Southeast Florida, I mean, they are just littered with golf courses. I think you can't go more than 2 miles and not be at another golf course, right?
We've got a lot of them. We've got more golf courses in Palm Beach County than any county in the nation. And the state of Florida, I believe, has more golf courses than all but four countries in the world.
Wow. Kevin, when you were growing up playing the game, when did you start playing competitively? When did you try to really work at it?
I played a lot of different sports as a young kid through middle school. Once I got into high school, I started taking golf more seriously, and it became the only sport I played. So I'd say it was in that middle school to high school transition. But I did grow up in a nice way, in that it was a casual introduction. It was really literally working around the golf course at a young age and just hitting balls in some spare time, free time. And my father and others would come over and help me out for 2 minutes here and there. And I look back, and it was just a wonderful way to grow up, because I really got to appreciate all aspects of the golf business and all the people that made golf available to people on a daily basis. And it was a beautiful way to grow up. They also all along the way gave a lot back to the game of golf. And I think that's where I really took an interest in the service mindset related to the game.
Obviously, you went to the University of Florida, played golf there for the Gators. So what was your time like at the University of Florida?
Come from a long line of Gators, I'm sad to say to you, but it was a great experience. My father also played golf there. My godfather played golf there. I had a nice experience there. We had a very good team at the time. It was a stacked team. We won a couple SEC championships and one NCAA championship while I was there. So it was a powerhouse at the time. A lot of travel, a lot of time away from campus. And people aren't kidding when they give these college athletes some credit for getting through school, because it's a big, big, big commitment. Yes.
What do you remember about that national championship?
Well, that, I remember that I kind of missed out, because in the middle of my college career, I took a redshirt year in the middle of my tenure there. And that was the year we won nationals. One other year, we lost nationals by 3 shots, I believe, my freshman year. And then a couple of years later, when I redshirted, the team won that national title. So I remember overall just having a very good team, a lot of great friendships. A number of the guys went on to play the PGA Tour. I myself got out of college and probably wasn't playing my best golf at that time, and went to work, got married, started having a family at a relatively young age, really enjoyed my work life, but all along the way have still enjoyed competing, playing, and then the service end of the game kind of got a hold of me, and I'm quite passionate about that as well.
Those SEC championships, and now, I mean, you know what it was like back then, but now with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma too, I guess you could say upper echelon programs when it comes to collegiate golf, not just on the men's side, but the women's side as well. What do they add to this now 16-team SEC?
It's just tough. You know, there's a lot of competition. There are more good players than ever before. The college programming, I look at it now, and it's just incredible. The facilities that these colleges have and what they offer to their players is amazing. You know, back when I played, and I think a lot of people of that era would agree, you kind of felt like you had to go to a Sunbelt state for a good college golf experience. Because that's where you could play more golf year round. And you look at the facilities that some of these universities have now around the country, and quite honestly, some universities overseas that I'm familiar with. And it's just incredible. So I think the weather's less of a concern than ever before with the advent of indoor facilities, virtual golf simulators. And there's probably a pretty good argument that a little bit of time off in the winter where you're just focusing on your body and rehabbing it might be a healthy thing. And I think we've seen that. I think you've seen a lot of success from a lot of universities around the country outside of not only the SEC, but the rest of the Sunshine State, so to speak.
You didn't play golf professionally. You stayed an amateur, but you still have been involved with golf, not just competition-wise, but you joined the Florida State Golf Association and you were on their board. You were an executive committee member, and then you served 2 years as president of that. What was that time like?
Wonderful experience. A lot of our connections in golf around the state got a hold of me, got me involved with the Florida State Golf Association. I've seen the organization quite literally be operated out of the trunk of a car to becoming the largest and most active state golf association in the country. Over 350,000 members of the FSGA, 660 plus tournament days a year, offering programming to all sides of the game, net events, championship events, professional events, amateur events, junior tour that's just exploded. And it's been a lot of fun to be a small part of that growth, but just to develop relationships with the people that are really directly responsible for all that success around the state. So that's really been wonderful. I did work in the golf business. I mean, I felt like I worked in the golf business as a kid since a young age and all through my teenage years. And when I got out of Florida, I did work in the golf business for a couple of years for friends of my father's at different clubs around the country. That was a great experience while I was figuring out what my next step was going to be. And that was my other real big interest was finance. I went to work with Merrill Lynch shortly after college and have been at the same firm with the same team ever since. But that passion job of giving back to the game of golf around the state was really a lot of fun for me. Learned a lot as well. Made me appreciate just, again, how big this game really is and how many well-meaning people make this game happen. And you feel like you have a sense, growing up in the game of golf, you feel like you have a sense of the size and the scope of the game. And I continue to feel, even now at the USGA, it's like the more you understand the game and the more you dive deep into serving the game, the bigger the game gets. It just, the ripple out effects of this game are so powerful and so positive. And look forward to talking to more about that.
What were your thoughts when you were contacted by the USGA about joining their executive committee?
Surprised, thankful, surprised. I had known a number of people in the past that have served either on the executive committee or former presidents of the USGA, and just had deep respect for the organization. I had participated as a competitor in a few USGA championships, just loved the professional nature in which they conduct themselves and their championships. Through the State Golf Association service, had a pretty good understanding of the connective tissue of the USGA, how the state and regional golf associations are such important partners to the USGA and vice versa. And the USGA's connection to just about every organization in the game around the world. So it was a quick yes. And I'm very thankful because, you know, time goes by quickly. My first 3 years with USGA have gone by quickly already. But I continue to just be so appreciative of being able to serve the game in some way and give back to the game and hold these people that, you know, the 300 plus people that work for the USGA, the executive leadership team of the USGA, and all those people at the state and regional golf associations, not to mention the PGA of America, the RNA, we can keep going. Just a lot of high quality people that are a joy to be around and learn from.
You are the championship committee chair for the United States Golf Association. So what does that entail? What are your duties?
It's a great question. We are very involved with future site selection and the conducting of the existing championships, 15 domestic championships, plus the Walker Cup and Curtis Cups every 2 years. Plus, not a lot of people quite know, but we're also involved as a partner in a couple of really wonderful events outside the U.S., that being the Latin America Amateur Championship and the World Amateur Team Championship. So just really involved in all aspects of that. We're just smart enough to let the executive leadership team of the USGA really run with the ball on these championships. But one of the things that we do love, all our executive committee members, is while we're on site at these championships, is to continue to connect with other stakeholders in the game, whether that's future sites or whether it's with the Golf Course Superintendents Association or the local PGA sections the state and regional golf associations, who are our allied golf associations, might just be the memberships of the club, the leadership of the clubs that are obviously hosting a championship at their club in a way to give back to the game and create some more good history. So there's a lot of connective tissue there that's powerful. And again, I think in the future, we're going to be looking, there's such a desire on people to give back. They realize how much good has come into their life through this game of golf, and they want to give back. And it's such a unifying force that we find with these leaders of these clubs, these members of these clubs that have some influence. And I think in the future, we're going to be looking for more and more ways to further connect with them to scale certain programming and do even more good.
For the U.S. Open, it seems like the USGA has settled on a basic rotation of some of the most beautiful, well-known golf courses in the country. How did you guys come up with that?
It's been a work in progress for many years, but you quickly realize that even though it might be 7, 10, 12, 15 years later, when you go back to a site, there are far more knowns and less unknowns when you return there. And again, we do believe, and we were taught this a while back, that the venues really do matter to the players. And when you look at it from that perspective and you realize what a partnership it takes now to conduct these championships, they're bigger than ever before. The Open Championships, the men's and women's Open Championships, the infrastructure build-outs are bigger than ever before. It takes a real partnership with the club, sometimes with the city and the state, with golf leaders in that area. So by going back to some of the game's most just iconic venues, that's a beautiful thing in and of itself, but it lends itself to a real partnership where we can benefit each other and just really go down this path of continual improvement, even though there may be a number of years separating the dates.
The golf ball is going to be rolled back in 28, I believe, is the date for that. The RNA and the USGA, the governing bodies of the game of golf, have decided on that. How does that help you keep some of the courses that are in that rotation in play? Because like a Pebble Beach, it has nowhere to expand. It's pretty much landlocked. So if you don't roll the golf ball back, you have to kind of narrow the fairways to make the course to have some kind of bite, don't you?
There's no getting around the fact that the players of today are the best they've ever been. It's just difficult to contain them, and not that we're trying to. We want to play the golf courses the way that, more or less, the way they were designed by the architect. We will see lower numbers in certain championships going forward, right? We've already seen it, and we will continue to see it. Mother Nature always has a seat at the table. If Mother Nature works against you just for a few hours one day, and it's a little softer, the guys will tear it up. So the golf ball rollback, I think what we'll find is that it's a lot more about slowing down future increases than it is taking where we are today and really going backwards. I do believe that a number of us will find that the differences are not very noticeable after one or two rounds. The difference is really between playing in 75 degrees and 95 degrees. It's between, you know, when the fairways are a little bit drier or they've got a little bit of dew on them. So we've seen this, you know, we've seen this throughout history. And it's, you just can't escape the fact that we just can't keep going at the pace we're going. Long will always be long. And I think the guys, specifically the men, but also the women, and it's not just the professional game, it's elite amateurs. It's every club out there has got certain players that just hit it a long way. They're going to continue to get longer, all of them, over the future decades. It's just that this will be a little bit more about slowing down the pace of those future increases. It was left unchecked for decades, and we feel it's our responsibility to put some guardrails in place now, knowing that, fully understanding that the game is going to continue to get longer. Athletes are the best they've ever been. The golfers are the best they've ever been. They take care of themselves and are going to continue to do so. And you never bet against the engineers. The engineers of these equipment manufacturers are brilliant, and they'll continue to be, and they'll continue to advance the game going forward. But your point about being some of the land that these requirements that these venues you just can't escape the fact that courses are getting longer and longer, and we want to continue to go back. You know, you look at some of the rotations now with the Curtis Cup, whether it's going to Bel Air or National Golf Links or Pine Valley, or the Walker Cup going to Cypress and Bandon and Oakmont. I mean, we don't want to, we want to be able to keep going back to these venues in future years.
Obviously, the U.S. Open is the bell cow for the USGA, if you will. But when you look at some of the other championships, like a U.S. Mid-Am Championship, a U.S. Junior Girls, Boys, U.S. Amateur, you know, Women and Men Championship, is it difficult to find places to host the United States Golf Association? Or when you flash that name out there, do clubs pretty much welcome you with open arms and saying, yes, we'd love to have you?
It hasn't always been this way, but we are in a period of time now where we're rather fortunate. There is a lot of demand to host USGA championships, and we're just fortunate that way. I think part of it speaks to, you know, the USGA being a little bit more open, transparent, being a better partner. We want to emphasize that and continue that going forward. It also speaks to the fact, I think, that the game is broadening through your medium here, you know, messaging the game of golf to more and more people through expanded TV and other avenues. People are becoming more aware of the amateur game. You've seen it in the collegiate game. We see it in the amateur game. There's a greater and greater interest in hosting some of these iconic amateur championships. And that's a beautiful thing. And it's a little bit more than just the professional game these days. There's a certain beauty to these amateur championships, right? I mean, from an infrastructure point of view, it requires much less. So it's less of a disturbance to the club. Yet you're really witnessing tomorrow's superstars compete today. And there's a real sense of purity about them. You know, they're not playing for prize money. They're playing in a very pure competitive spirit. And there's a certain beauty to that alongside being a spectator at them, as you well know. Walking down the fairways with these great amateurs, there's just nothing like. I mean, for those people that have experienced it, I think most of them want to go back and do it again.
No doubt about it. My question might be a little bit off. You might not be able to answer it, but could a potential championship be coming to the state of Arkansas in the near future?
There's a lot of good golf there, we should talk about that some more going forward. Yeah.
I know there are quite a few people after having the PGA Tour champions at Pleasant Valley this past year and what Padraig Harrington was able to do out there. I think that the state of Arkansas would love to host a USGA championship if we can just find the right course to host it.
We'll talk about that some more. I know we've been close to you a number of times, and we're going to continue coming back to areas that aren't too far away, but you never know what the future might hold.
Kevin, your favorite golf course that you've ever played? You might not be able to answer that, but then again, you might. What is it?
It's a hard one. I was told a long time ago, and I do subscribe to this theory, that comparing golf courses is like comparing different pieces of delicious fruit. You know, an apple is an apple, an orange is an orange. They're just different. My problem is everywhere I play, I enjoy it, many of them for just different reasons. So in my book, they're either really good, they're great, or they're really great. I tend to subscribe to the old style game, the Lynxy type game overseas. So if I were going to go a certain direction, it would be that. And it'd be pretty hard to argue against the old course at St. Andrews.
All right. Fantasy foursome, living or deceased, you and three others that you would like to play a round of golf with. Who would they be?
Wow. This might be a bit different. I might go old school, though, based on our discussion today about the USGA and its history in the game here in this country. I might go back to not the beginning of the USGA, but close to the beginning and close to when this golf really took off in this country. And that would be probably Francis Ouimet winning the 1913 U.S. Open at the Country Club in Brookline. I might pick some outside of family. I should qualify it by saying that first. Outside of family, I might go all the way back and go to a Harry Vardon, Ted Ray, and Francis Ouimet. It just speaks to this game becoming really popular in this country. It speaks to a lot of connective power between golf in the UK in this country, to see what their perspective would be on the game then is compared to now would be incredible.
I think that would be something. I mean, that would be something when you think back to the way golf was back then to where it is today. Boy, it's made some great strides, hasn't it?
It's a beautiful game. There's nothing like it. I mean, just a believer that the world would be a much better place if more people were playing the game. and the growth of the game in so many different ways has been beautiful to see. You know, just like the game has expanded and there's more different ways to play the game than ever before, it's been fun to be a part of the USGA also expanding its programming alongside the growth of the game.
Kevin, if you ever need a second, a third, or a fourth on a site visit, I'm game. I have clubs and they do travel.
I understand you have clubs. I know you've played in a USGA championship in the past, and I look forward to us not only walking the fairways on a site visit, but playing the game together. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be a lot of fun. Kevin, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it, and we'll stay in touch.
Trey, thank you. And, you know, thank you again for bringing kind of the game of golf to more and more people through this medium. Really do appreciate that. You're doing golf a great service. And please come visit us in Southeast Florida and bring your clubs.
Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group is the leader in the state in managing hotel properties. From El Dorado to Jonesboro to Fayetteville to Kansas City and back home in Little Rock, you will find a Beachwood Pinnacle managed hotel property. Are you looking for a weekend staycation? Book the Hilton Garden Inn located on Rock Street and enjoy the Agassi 7 rooftop bar with fantastic views of the Little Rock skyline. Open Sunday through Thursday evenings from 4 to 11 and Friday and Saturday from 5 to midnight. Find them on the web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group.
UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine is taking golf to the next level. As the official orthopedics and sports medicine provider for Razorback Athletics, UAMS Health covers all 19 Razorback sports programs, including golf, and is the official medical partner of the Simmons Bank Championship presented by Stevens. They're also proud to sponsor professional golfers Ken Duke and Glenn Day. Have a golf injury? Call Ortho at 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today. That's 501-686-8674. Welcome back to From the Shoregrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Hey, don't forget, when you need an overnight place to stay, go see one of our great friends, a Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel property. That's right, find them on the web, bphotels.com. Matthew Allen and Blair Allen, they know how to manage hotel properties, so make sure when you need an overnight place to stay, it's at a Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group property. You heard Kevin explain that the United States Golf Association has planned out several years in advance the sites for the U.S. Open. I gave you the first couple of sites through 2027, but let's go to 2028, Winged Foot Golf Club, then back to Pinehurst No. 2 in 2029, then Marion Golf Club in Pennsylvania in 2030, 2031 out to the West Coast in Los Angeles, Riviera Country Club, 2032 they're going to stay on the West Coast, Pebble Beach, 2033 back to Oakmont Country Club, 2034 they're going to Michigan, Oakland Hills Country Club, 2035 back to Pinehurst No. 2, 2036 back to Shinnecock Hills, 2037 back to Pebble Beach Golf Links, 2038 the Country Club in Brookline, Massachusetts, 2039 the Los Angeles Country Club, the North Course there, 2040 back to Marion Golf Club, 2041 back to Pinehurst Resort No. 2, 2042 back to Oakmont Country Club, 2044 back to Pebble Beach, 2047 Pinehurst No. 2, 2049 Oakmont Country Club, and 2050 Marion Golf Club with 2051, the furthest they have it scheduled out right now, back to Michigan and Oakland Hills Country Club. Those are the sites for the upcoming U.S. Opens, and they also have the U.S. Senior Open. It's going to be at the Broadmoor every several years and other courses working in as well. So put those golf courses on your list of places that, hey, you might want to go play and say, I've played where the United States Open has been contested, specifically Pebble Beach and Pinehurst No. 2. You can't go wrong with Pebble Beach or Pinehurst, in my opinion. Hey, that's going to do it for this edition of From the Shoregrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. As always, thank you for listening, whether it be via the terrestrial radio or the podcast platforms that you listen on. I greatly appreciate it. And remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shoregrass.
You have been listening to From the Shoregrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.